ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः हरिः ॐ ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट् अस् बोत् मे ब्रह्मन् bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all.
We have been expounding and trying to understand the Hindu religion, Hinduism. In this connection, I have given certain important summary of the main points, and in our last class, which lasted only for about 30 minutes, I briefly touched upon Hindu scriptures. Every religion has two important things. Every religion is based upon scriptures, shastras. And the second thing we have to understand is somehow, whatever may be our intelligence, we feel that old is gold. Nothing new is valuable. For example, for Hindus, Vedas are the most important scriptures. But there have been so many saints since the so many centuries, thousands of years, we can say, but we do not accept them as Vedas. Divine revelations, scripture, literally means divine revelation. So what is not a divine revelation? Every saint, whatever he experiences, when he speaks of it, is it not a divine revelation? But at some point, we draw a line and say, all those things that came before are really divine revelations. And later on that came, they might be, might not. Every religion, Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity, Islam, you take any religion, unfortunately this is the condition. So, what are the important scriptures of Hinduism? Hinduism too is based upon scripture. First of all, we have to know what is the meaning of the scripture. The word, Sanskrit word for scriptures is shastra. Shastra means to command, to cajole, to request, to teach. That which guides us. In the beginning with a rod, later on when our capacity to understand grows, then it simply reveals the truth about life, what is the goal of life, how to attain it. Now scripture also means the knowledge which we cannot otherwise obtain through our five sense organs. If I can see the sun rising, there is no need for any scripture to come and tell me about it. Only that knowledge which we cannot obtain by any means, however fine an instrument is. Electronic microscope, the most powerful telescope, cannot reveal to us the truths about God, other world, or even not to speak of God, even of ghosts. So how do we know whether the such things exist? And if we don't know such things exist, is there any harm? Yes, there is a harm. If we do not know, then we will be missing a lot of things. For example, Hindu scriptures tell us, or every scripture, the scriptures of every religion tells us, that if you do not realize God, if you do not please Him, you will lose a lot. Now we do not know that we stand to lose a lot. Because no science in this world can ever reveal to us. Maybe we are very happy in this world. There are, you know, few lucky people who are very happy people. They are quite healthy. They have all the things necessary to enjoy life. But our scriptures come and tell, it is a most miserable life. Not miserable from our standpoint. Miserable from what we could really have attained if only we have known from that point of view. So the scriptures alone can reveal to us. When it reveals to us, we will have a desire. So the scriptures will tell us what is it we really ought to strive for, and how to strive for intelligently, because there is a right way and there is a wrong way. But in course of time, what happens? That these very scriptures, if they are not interpreted properly, first of all, secondly, if they are not proved, then they, what you call, they gather mold, they become old, they can even become dangerous. As we can see, some of the modern interpretations of certain religions produce terrific acts, all in the name of religion, scriptural commandments. So, practically every religion is alive because there are certain people whom we usually call saints who prove the statements of the scriptures. That is what generally most of the saints do. But then there comes a time when even the power of a saint will not do, because the flow of the stream, the general flow of the stream is so strong, a superhuman power, a divine power is needed to stem that tide and turn it back. That is where practically every religion believes it. Buddhism believes in incarnation of God, incarnation of Buddha. Hinduism, of course, believes not in one incarnation, but many, many, as many as necessary, as long as necessary. Christianity believes only in one incarnation of God, and the second time he comes, there will be no world. All of us will be down and lifted up to be put into eternal hell or heaven. I'm only joking, it is not true. But Hinduism is a speciality, which I will very shortly come to that point. So these incarnations, what do they do? They, even Islam, which usually doesn't believe in an incarnation, is not exactly as Hinduism believes, but they call whom we call incarnation, they call prophet. But even though he is a prophet, he has tremendous power. Even today, his power is tremendous. Their numbers are increasing. There is something in him which inspires people. So let us quickly try to finish one important point. How do we know who is an incarnation of God? As far as spiritual knowledge is concerned, there is absolutely no difference between an incarnation of God and the most ordinary saint who had a vision of God. If you have tasted one drop of milk, or somebody had drunk 10 gallons of milk, the experience is absolutely the same. The difference is in the power, not in knowledge, but in the power. Sri Ramakrishna used to illustrate this by way of giving an example, that a small stick floating on a river, it can hardly float by itself. Somehow it is maintaining its floating power. It reaches the ocean. But let even a small bird sit on it, immediately it sinks. Whereas as a huge ship, not only it floats and reaches the ocean, it also carries with it thousands of people, heavy vehicles. You know, whenever you cross the channel, you take your car and then you cross the ocean. So like that, an incarnation of God is like a huge ship which can take people across for long, long time. So the criteria to know who is an incarnation of God is this, that the power, the influence of such a person would last for many, many, many centuries, thousands of years. You know, Rama was born thousands of years back. Krishna was born thousands of years back. Buddha was born 2,500 years back. Christ was born 2,000 years back. But even today, there are people who are awakened into spiritual life by just reading their life, their teachings. Their power not only hadn't diminished, but in fact it is increasing more and more. So that is how we know who is an incarnation of God. Nowadays, you know, so many people are claiming to be incarnations of God. They are like meteors. They are just a big flash of bulb, you know. And then after a few days, you will not see them at all. It may last for a lifetime, or much less in many cases. And that is the end of it. After that, the whole place will be gathering cobwebs. But an incarnation of God, year by year, century after century, their power seems to be increasing. The power of transforming a character, the power of influencing our emotions, could be made by any Tom, Dick and Harry. Even a comedian can transform your emotions for 5 minutes. A saint can influence our character in a very small way. But an incarnation of God, the tremendous transformation of power of not merely individuals, but of entire societies for a long, long, long time. That is how we know what these incarnations are. So what these incarnations do, not only they follow the scriptures, they realize the truths that have been taught by the scriptures, they also forge new pathways for the realization of God suited to the changing times and circumstances. Not only that, they also give us the right type of ideals suited for the particular times. Every time the eternal truths will remain the same, but the way we apply them, that always changes. And then they reinterpret the scriptures in a way that we have to update, you know, whenever you have any antivirus installed in your systems, practically you have to update your software. If you don't, you will be ridden with virus. An incarnation, what he does, he works like a powerful antivirus. And these stupid ideas that we are going through are the viruses going through in our minds, you know. Nowadays so many ideas are coming. So, without taking much of your time, at first I will very briefly tell you about Hindu scriptures and then I will go into a little more detail. First of all, the Hindu scriptures are called Shastras, or popularly they are known as Vedas. The meaning of the word Veda means knowledge, to know. Veda means to know. Vedas means knowledge. Knowledge means that knowledge which we cannot obtain through our 5 sense organs. Super sensory knowledge. Is there God? Is there afterlife? And is there any way to reach there, if at all it is there? What are the means to reach that goal? What would be the obstacles? What would be the conditions? Why we should do it? All these things are comprised of 3 points. What are those 3 points? Tattva, Purushartha, Hita. Tattva means truth. What is the truth? Not only the truth about God, the truth also about this world. Why? Because we are, as Hindu scriptures tell, we are covered by Maya. Maya means wrong understanding about ourselves, about the world. We are living in this world. We are experiencing this world, but we are unable to understand the real nature of this world. What is the real nature of this world? One fact we all know. What is the nature of this world? It is in a flux. It is changing. Here is birth, here is death. Here is good, here is evil. Here is happiness, here is unhappiness. What is our understanding? That we are never going to die. We are not going to suffer. Is it right? Not only we are not going to die, we don't expect also whom we love not to die. But we definitely expect whom we don't like to disappear very soon. that is also not going to happen. So, somehow the idea is there, this is a permanent world. In a corner of our mind, we know the death is going to come, but we always postpone it. When do you think you are going to die? After 10 years. So after 10 years, you ask the same question. When are you going to die? After 10 years. At the age of 100, you ask, when are you going to die? I think another 5, 6 years. He means another 10 years. So thus it goes on. And also the another truth about this world is, as we said, based upon this, if you are unhappy, don't ever think that you are always going to be unhappy. It is going to change. If you are happy, don't be too happy about it. That is also going to change. That is called wisdom. Then if everything is changing, we have this fear of insecurity. The biggest example of this ignorance of this nature of this world. 20 days before, would anyone have thought the banks are going to be bankrupt? Oh, what is this nonsense that is happening? Well, if there are banks, if there is a head, there will be a headache. If there is a bank, but we do not seem to accept that. As though it goes on increasing it in its prosperity, profit. But you see, it is a very painful way of learning this lesson. Also, you know, disease comes, old age comes, death comes. These are all everyday facts. We are seeing them every day, and yet it doesn't sink into our mind. So the scripture comes and tells us, do not be too cocksure about the stability of this world. Does it mean to say we should be morose, we should be gloomy? No. What it says is, accept it. You must be aware of the fact. After that, you do whatever you like. Also the law of karma. Now, especially Hinduism, Buddhism and Jainism, these are the only three religions which specially emphasize the law of karma. When we look around us, we see so much of differences. Good, bad, rich, poor, literate, illiterate, healthy, sick. Not only individuals, but nations. So, what is the cause? And if you have to believe the scriptures, you have to say that we are responsible. Each one of us, as a nation, we are responsible. Though it is not relevant to our topic today, not very relevant, a little bit relevant. Somebody has remarked, you know, why America is having such terrible problems. Because it went to Iraq, declared war, and did so much damage. And all of those people prayed to Allah. And they are telling, see, Allah is true. We prayed and see the condition, what happened. Though, I'm telling it in a lighter way, it is true. There must be a cause. Whether it is Iraq or something else, we don't know. But we are squarely responsible for our own happiness, unhappiness, sickness and health, in for everything in life. This is what Hinduism very strongly believes. Buddhism, Buddha never talked about God, but he always used to emphasize the results of actions follow every man's footsteps, like the wheels of a cart follow the footsteps of the oxen, the law of karma. Where from do we get this knowledge that we are responsible for our own actions? We are what we are because of what we did in the past. Because no scientist would ever be able to tell you this. You look at a baby, physically disabled or mentally retarded, or, you know, so Siamese twins and all those horrible contortions. How do you explain that? There is no way to explain, excepting there must have been, if this is the effect, there must have been a cause. So, first of all, we have to find out these scriptures. By Vedas is meant only those truths which we do not know. We don't know whether God exists. We don't know what happens to us after the fall of this body. We don't know where we go, whether there is going to be a rebirth, and what is it going to be its effect. We do not know. These are some of the truths that are revealed. So scriptures also mean they are not imaginary guesses or at best educated guesses. No. They are the direct experiences of certain people called rishis. These rishis have gone somehow beyond the mind, have experienced, seen these truths for themselves, and they are merely coming and then telling them to us. These came to be known as Vedas. The whole of Hindu religion is dependent upon these Vedic teachings. So these Vedic teachings are called revelations. That is why there is a Sanskrit word. It is called apaurusheya. Purusha means human being. Apaurusheya means it is not the concoctions of any human being. It's simply when the mind becomes pure, it becomes like a mirror. On it are reflected the truths, supernatural truths, supersensuous truths, and this person merely is expressing them in a particular language. This is the basis of all religions. For Hinduism, Vedas are the basis. Now, depending upon these are also called Shrutis. Shruti means that which is heard. Shruti doesn't mean somebody hears through the ear. There are no ears. There is only when the pure mind experiences intuitively certain thing, it is called Shruti, heard. Nothing to do with external sound. Simply knowledge comes like that. And also it is called Shruti because these teachers, they passed on their knowledge from the mouth of the guru to the disciple, from the mouth of his disciple to his disciple, guru parampara system, GPS. Hinduism is based on GPS, guru parampara system. That is why it is called Shrutis. Now, based upon these Shrutis or Vedas, a secondary type of scriptures have come. These scriptures are called Smriti. Smriti means memory. Here, memory doesn't mean memory. What it means is, these teachings, they go inside the mind of the disciple, and the disciple sits down, thinks about them, puts them in a beautiful, rational order, and presents them nicely to people like us. That is why they are called Smritis. So, two types of literature. Scriptures, that which is divine revelation, that which is based upon this divine revelation, human constructs, Paurusheya and Apaurusheya. Now, even though these secondary type of scriptures called Smritis are human constructs, they will never deviate from the main teachings of the Vedas. If they deviate, then they are simply thrown out as rubbish. Because how do you convey the idea of God or other world to others when you don't know anything? You have to rely upon somebody else. One more point is, at some particular point of time, there have been many revelations over a long period of time, since thousands of years, and according to some scholarly calculation, almost 11,000 years back, this accumulation of this Vedic knowledge or Vedic revelation started, and it went on almost till 2 or 3 centuries before BC. And all that literature, they have drawn a line and say, whatever has been accumulated so far alone will be called divine revelation, and whatever revelations people have after this time will not be included in them. For example, Christ's teaching, there was, Christ was an incarnation of God, so he must have divine revelation. He was a great rishi. Ramakrishna used to call him a great rishi. And if he was a great rishi, he must have revelation. If he had revelations, they are absolutely right. But that will not be included in the Vedas. So Ramakrishna's teachings, it is all divine revelations, they will also not be included in the Vedas. So also Rama, Krishna's teaching, for example. What is Krishna's teaching? The Bhagavad Gita will not be included in the Vedas. It is called Smriti Prasthana, one of the most important scripture, but secondary, human construction, it is said there. So, these are the two types of scriptures. What do these scriptures teach? The first thing is Tattva. Tattva means truth. Truth about what is true about this world, what is true beyond this world, about God, about afterlife, about other worlds, etc. Are there other worlds? Yes, if there is an afterlife, you have to live somewhere. So there is another world, not world. For Hindus, worlds. Is it that depends upon the amount of donation you give to the Vedanta Center? The amount of what we call punya or merit we acquire, you go to Indra Loka, then you go to Prajapati Loka. The highest, if you have accumulated the highest amount of merit, you will go to the highest personal world, which is called Brahma Loka. Or in devotional language, it is known as Vaikuntha, Kailasa, Goloka. For Ramakrishna devotees, Ramakrishna Loka it is called. Highest. But unless you are totally identified with the God, you will not be able to go there. Anyway, these are the truths. That is called Tattva. Second is scriptures. The second part of the teaching, Purushartha. Purushartha means what are the supreme values in a human being's life. It is called Purusha and Artha. Artha means value. And human values, not animal values, because we still believe, we don't know much about animals, but they do not seem to have any values like, you know, righteous living, morality, etc., etc. Human beings alone have that capacity to sit down and say, let me live a life of values. And these values, according to Hinduism, are classified into four types. The first is called dharma. Dharma means live such a life. You will be happy in this world. You will also be happy in the other world. That is the foundation of happiness. Happiness is different. Foundation of happiness is different. Then comes artha. Artha means make the instruments for the experience of your desires, for the enjoyment of happiness. The instruments must be fit, proper instruments. Artha doesn't mean only money. There are three types of instruments. The external instruments, for example, you want to eat a sweetmeat. So a sweetmeat is an instrument. Then there is the body, our own body. That also must be right, healthy, proper, not tired, fully conscious, hungry. Then only you can eat. That is the second instrument. The third instrument is the mind. Mind should not be worried. It should not be indolent. If you are sleeping, however healthy your body is, you can't enjoy a sweetmeat. So these are the three instruments. How to make these three instruments in a proper way? That is the subject of the second Purushartha value, supreme value. Then the third is called Kama. Kama means fulfillment of a desire. Why is it called a supreme value? Well, you can't simply say, I have a desire, I will go and I will enjoy as much as I like. The result of enjoy as you like. Do you know what is the result? Why do you think all the banks are falling down now? Because you enjoyed indiscriminately. Is it right? Yeah. You know, you just, they went on giving. Here is credit card. Do whatever you like. What is the result? They are also gone. Your money also is gone along with that. You see, now who has to suffer? Who has to pay? We have to pay. That's why, what is kama? Fulfillment of a desire in a balanced, righteous way. A child's dharma is different. A grown-up person's dharma is different. An old man's dharma is different. A sick man's diet is different. A child's diet is different. This is what Sri Ramakrishna put so beautifully. When a mother cooks a dish, she cooks in one way to the child, cooks another way to her grown-up child, cooks another way to a sick child, to an old person. You see, the proper way, righteous way, in balance. Enjoyment righteously and in balance, that is a supreme value, and it requires tremendous amount of self-discipline, self-control. But these three values are called instrumental values. Instrument is always meant for the sake of something else. A knife is an instrument. So the knife is not there for its own sake. It is there for somebody else's sake. So what are these three four instruments? There is only one goal in life, supreme goal, that is to know who we are, to realize God, to experience self-knowledge, that is they called moksha. Dharma, artha, kama and moksha. So these scriptures, they teach, these are the four values, supreme values. Only a human being can desire them. Human being alone can understand them. Human being alone can attain them through the proper way. How to attain them? That is the next question. So how to attain them? First of all, the scriptures have divided human society into four castes. Many people criticize Hinduism is full of caste-based system, etc., which is true. It also degenerated into a what is called birth-based system. But in the beginning, that was not the idea at all. It is based upon guna and karma. Guna means the capacity, the talent, the intelligence of a person and the appropriate activities such a person does. Guna and karma. So, society has been divided into four categories. And interestingly, this Plato also divides human society into four categories. Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. That is to say, the highest type of mind which wants only the highest type of value, which is liberation, they are called Brahmins, upper caste. Ideal way of understanding the four castes. And then there are warriors who are also very good and they are necessary to protect the society and see that these laws, these disciplines that are given to us from the scriptures are made to apply. Wherever there is a law, there must be two people, the law giver and the law enforcer. What happens if there is no law enforcer? The law will become absolutely useless. The warriors are supposed to be the law enforcers, whereas the Brahmins were supposed to be the law givers. And then there is a third class, which are even low in quality and in action. They are less intelligent, but they are also the backbone of the society. So there must be some people to cultivate the lands and to carry goods, to supply them. These are called the merchant class. Then there is a fourth type which are much less intelligent. What is the fourth type? You have to tell them every time, stand up, he will stand up. And he goes on standing up. He says, you know, I only asked you to stand up because somebody is passing. After he is passing, you can sit. No, nobody else is coming. But he won't sit unless you tell him to do it. He doesn't have the capacity to think independently. This is called the fourth caste, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. Whether this caste system exists in any society in that specific obvious way or not, this system is always there in every family, in every society, you will find it. You may not call it caste system, you may call it class system, doesn't matter, whatever you call it. We will discuss the details later on. These are the four human classifications. Then, life, every person's life, whether he belongs to the highest caste or the lowest caste, life is divided into four categories. These are called ashramas. Student life, the married life, the retired life, and the life devoted to God or spiritual life. Brahmacharya, Garhastya, Vanaprastha, Sannyasa Ashrama. But the purpose of dividing people into four categories and the purpose of dividing the life into four different stages is only one. How to make these people learn what are the supreme values of life and how to put them into practice. So a child's way of acquiring these supreme values is totally different from a young person, from a middle-aged person, from an old person. So these are the things. Purushartha means what are the supreme values of life and how one should lead them. That is the subject matter of these scriptures. This is the second part. First, this is the goal. Second, this is what you ought to, this is how you ought to live. The third is called hita. Hita means specific means, in details, how to acquire these four supreme values. And all the discussion that we had, I can summarize now in a few sentences. What is it? Irrespective of what a human being is, whether he is a Hindu or a Christian, 50 million years back, or 1 billion years later, we all have one common goal. What is it? That I want to live forever. I want to know everything. I want to be infinitely, eternally happy. No question about it. So the scriptures only tell us how to achieve this three, or three in one. This is called God, Sat, Chit, Ananda. How to attain immortality, how to know everything, how to be completely happy. This is the essence of the scriptures. Now, whether they are divine revelations or human constructs, this is the essence. How to make us happy, how to avoid unhappiness in life, how to attain to God realization or self-knowledge, how to know who we are. Now, I will give you a little more details. All the scriptures are divided into 7 classifications. But before I go into that, I must also tell you, all the scriptures, they give us 4 important principles, points, 4 teachings. If you understand these 4 teachings, you understand the teachings of all the Hindu scriptures. Swami Vivekananda, as many of our devotees know, summarized Vedanta. Vedanta means what? The essence of Vedas. What are those 4? You know that? Each soul is potentially divine. The goal of life is to manifest this divinity within by controlling nature, external and internal. Manifest this divinity either by karma yoga, bhakti yoga, raja yoga, jnana yoga, by one, more or all of these put together, and be free. Free. This is the whole of religion. Doctrines, dogmas, temples, churches, books, these are all secondary details. But from the Vedic teachings, these 4 that I will summarize, because if you understand it, and if you are planning not to attend my talks in future, you will get the benefit of it. The first teaching of the Vedas is, there is only one reality called Brahma. There is only one reality, and that is called in Sanskrit as Brahman. Brahman means the biggest. Biggest means infinite. There cannot be anything more than infinite. So that is called Brahman. Brihat Brahma. That is the first. What is it? There is only one reality. We will expound this later on. I am just giving you the in essence. So if everything that exists is, instead of calling Brahman, I call it God. If only God exists, what is not sacred? Therefore, everything is sacred. Everything is sacred. There is nothing non-Atman, non-God, what is called non-sacred. Sacredness, sacred is another name for God. That is the second teaching of the Vedas. The third is, everything is interconnected. WWW. The whole universe is interconnected. And those who understand this, that their view is called holistic view. And if they don't understand, that is called holistic view. W-H-O-L-E and H. Holistic. Nowadays, scientists are recognizing this fact. Nothing is redundant. Everything is connected. Everything has a connection. That is why there is the biggest discovery in modern times is, if a butterfly flutters its wings here, there will be a tornado somewhere else. And literally it is true. Somehow these events, you know, one little event somewhere affects the whole universe. This is called holistic view. That's now we are waking up to the point, we can't cut down the trees, we can't go on sending so much of this carbon dioxide into this. Who is going to suffer? So everything is sacred, everything is interconnected. That is the third teaching. The fourth teaching, which is very, very marvelous. Everything has a meaning. There is no event that is without meaning. Everything that happens, that happened, that is going to happen, will have a meaning. Only it is left for us to discover. So these are the 4 teachings. That's what we discussed. Now, in details, we'll see. There are 7 types of scriptures, Hindu scriptures. I am not using the word Vedic scriptures because Hinduism is not a proper name. What was the proper name? Vedic religion. But it has become popular, so I use that word. There are 7 types of scriptures. These are called Vedas, Sutras, Smritis, Puranas, Itihasas, Darshanas and Tantras. Do not be put off by the Sanskrit names. I will very shortly explain to them. Vedas, as I already mentioned, Veda means knowledge. It was a mass of knowledge. That is, so many pure-minded people had little bit of revelations of that one single truth, which is called God or Brahman. And somebody had seen God in one way, another person had discovered God in another way. All these little discoveries have been put together, but that literature became so vast, so massive, that it became, in course of time, impossible to manage. There came a great soul and a genius. Probably the world has never seen a like of him again. His name was Krishnadvaipayana. He was known as Vedavyasa. Vyasa means editor. He who compiled means he did not discover them, but he gathered them together, put them together in a rational order, compiled and then classified them into four sections so that they are much more manageable, micromanagement. And then he had four disciples. To each one of them, he handed over one portion and said, "You and your disciples will be responsible for keeping up this knowledge so that it won't be lost." So that is how we use the word Vedas, which is a misnomer really. Veda is only one mass. So these Vedas, in course of time, have been divided into four parts. These are called Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda and Athar Veda. And all these four Vedas put together, they are not more than about 22,000 mantras. 22,000 mantras, as we know them right now. Because why I say that? This mass of literature has become so vast that even those disciples, they started subdividing them into smaller portions, giving them to their disciples. In course of time, it became a copyright, intellectual copyright. It's not a new discovery. The ancient rishis have discovered it long back. And then they won't give it to anybody. But when their own children had died, along with them also disappeared that mass of knowledge. Whatever we could collect, and the thanks would go to now Professor Max Muller, who took all this trouble, and he published these things. Anyway, the total number of mantras are about 22,000 in number. Okay, first let me enumerate what are these are called. Apaurushaya means divine revelations, not human constructs, and all the rest six other types of scriptures are human constructs based upon the understanding of these teachings of the Vedas. So the second type of scriptures are called sutras. Sutra literally means thread. So in those days, computers were not there, calculators were not there. People, you know, they wanted to understand everything, keep it in memory. They will have a small, you know, sutra means thread, a small aphorism. Sutra means aphorism. For example, Brahma Sutra, Dharma Sutra, Vyakarana Sutra, Kalpa Sutra, grammar, the ethics, how to conduct oneself in the society, and it talks about God and other things. These are sutra literature had come. I will deal with them later. The sutra literature, for just as an example, Brahma Sutra, Patanjali Yoga Sutra. You heard about Yoga Sutra? Just one small sentence, a small line, and that's it. Then, but they act as mnemonics. See, the people, disciples, they heard the explanations, kept them in their mind. They keep these sutras, these thread-like sentences, only to pull out the entire thing from behind. So, the system, we never believed that these will be published into books and anybody would read the books and understand them. One thing we have to understand, even ordinary scientific discoveries cannot be understood. They are also thread-like, you know. Einstein's theory of relativity, how big is it? E is equal to mc square, that's all. And tell me, explain it to me. You have to have a lot of background even to be able to understand yourself, let alone explain it to others. So the sutra is something like that. So these are mnemonic methods, means how to keep them in human memory, which is very limited, so that they won't be lost. This is called, a vast amount of literature had come into existence. They are called sutra literature, aphoristic literature. And the third type of is called smritis. Smriti literally means memory, but here in this context it means, you know, how to conduct our life in day to day. How a Brahmin should behave, how Kshatriyas must behave, how the warrior class or merchant class or the servants must behave. Ethics, the rules and regulations of how to conduct oneself in a human society, these are called smritis. Examples of them are Manusmriti, Yajnavalkya Smriti, Parashara Smriti, Raghunatha Smriti, etc. Those who do not understand Sanskrit, don't worry. There means a type of literature which exclusively deals with the conduct of human life in day-to-day life and to different classes, how that should be applied. A little more detail we will come later on. This is the third type of literature. Then there is a fourth type called Puranas. You know, Bhagavata, Purana, Vishnu Purana, Vamana Purana, Bhavishyat Purana, Garuda Purana. Purana means these Vedic teachings in the form of, you know, stories illustrating those teachings, like so Aesop's fables, like that. There is a moral, and every story is only to illustrate a particular. Is, or Jesus Christ used parables, Sri Ramakrishna has used parables. Puranas are five types. They say who is the ruler and who are the great kings, who are the great sages, how did this creation has come, etc. In a very digestible form for common people, these are called Puranas. There are 18 main Puranas and 18 subsidiary Puranas. This is the another class. Then there are Itihasa. Itihasa means Itihasa. Thus happened. It happened. Thus it happened. Means something like history. But according to Hinduism, you know what is the meaning of history? His story. God's story. Not your story. You would count for nothing. God's will that manifests in the form of, in course of time, that is the idea of history. So there were two important scriptures which influenced the whole of Hindu India. Do you know that? What are they? Ramayana and Mahabharata. Ramayana is the story of Rama, and the Mahabharata is the story of five Pandavas and 100 Kauravas. This is a kind of history, but as I said, is not to be taken literally as facts that happened in time, in the past. No, these are to be for the sake of illustrating how we should live. These great people have set up the examples of good, great people, the examples of very bad people, and if they are bad people, what happens to them is wonderful things. They also in a way fall into the category of Puranas, but they are distinguished as Itihasas. Then there is another class of literature came. They are called Darshanas. Darshana means literally philosophy. What we call in English, philosophy. You know what is philosophy in English language? Useless intellectual discussion. Yes, once two professors got into their head that they want to go in a balloon, have a balloon travel. So they got into them, and being philosophers, they did not know how to control it. It drifted. After some hours, it was coming down in a vast field. They looked down and they saw a farmer glaring at them, and they wanted to know where they were. So one of them shouted, "Hey, where are we?" He looked up, looked this side, that side for 10 minutes. After 10 minutes, he said, "You are in a balloon." So one philosopher turned to the other philosopher and said, "This man is even greater philosopher than us." Why? Because first of all, he is absolutely right. We are in a balloon. Secondly, the answer is perfectly useless. That's not the idea of a philosopher. Darshana means direct realization. Directly seeing God face to face. That's why when we go to meet a great saint, we call it Darshana. Or when we go to a temple, we call it, "I am going to have Darshana of the Lord." Without any intermediary, direct face-to-face realization, experiencing, that is called darshana. These darshanas in the past, there were for a long time, 6 schools of philosophy came. And now they had become redundant. All those 6 darshanas have become coalesced, as it were, into 3 schools of philosophy. All these 3 schools of philosophy go by the name of Vedanta. So, Vedanta center doesn't mean that we are practicing all the 3 schools. We only belong to one particular school predominantly. These 3 schools are called dualism, qualified non-dualism and non-dualism. Dvaita, Visishtadvaita and Advaita. They have their own merits. Briefly, I will touch upon them in course of our talks. These are called darshanas. A vast literature had sprung up, trying to defend their own beliefs and trying to smash the opponents' arguments, etc. But at the present times, these are the 3 schools of philosophy which are very prominent. All the Hindus can be divided into which category they fall. The founders or propagators of these philosophies were known as Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya and Shankaracharya. Then later on, sometime in the, from the, you can say, 6th or 7th century AD onwards, a new type of practice and literature had come, which influenced certain parts of India, like Bengal, Kashmir, Assam, etc. These came to be known as Tantric literature, Tantras, they are called Tantras. Predominantly, these people worship God as the Divine Mother. Predominantly, they are desirers of superpowers. Siddhi is what we call. They established a lot of, you know, secret societies, etc. But as a philosophy, it is the most marvelous philosophy. As practices are extraordinarily great practices, though people have perverted them, used them for their own perverted ends, this Tantra literature has influenced all the other systems of philosophy. Just to give an example, every day we have worship here in the temple. And this worship, 90% of it belongs to the Tantra, Tantric worship. 10% to the Vedas, Vedic worship, 90% belongs to Tantric worship. So these are the 7 types of scriptures. Of these 7 types, one type is divine revelation, which are known as Vedas. Based upon it, 6 types of literature, the aphoristic literature, the Smritis, Puranas, Itihasas, Darshanas or philosophies, and Tantric literature. All the Hindu scriptures, the scriptures which Hindus are familiar with, can be divided into these 7 categories. And I will go in my next classes a little more detailed so that the Hindus will at least know for once in your life, because you may not again go through this unless you are very eager to go through and go through some high textbook. Most of you know, I am sure you will be only listening to these classes. I will go into a little more details, and they are most interesting, and there is something very special about these scriptures that we will discuss in our next. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.